Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Viewing Angles, the internet's only movie podcast. I'm your host, Robert Mecki, and with me today is my favorite gray heron, Dan Leo.
It's me. I am the wily spirit known as the gray heron. It's great to be here.
Your presence is requested.
What a sick little guy.
All right, if you couldn't... I know, little freak, little fucking freak.
Yeah.
Love it. Miss seeing this type of stuff in theaters. Last movie we got like this was Napoleon. But today, if you couldn't tell from our intro, we're talking about the newest Studio Ghibli film, The Boy and the Heron, which is topping the box office, I think, surprisingly to me at least.
I mean, it's like $12 million, right? Like, so it's like a low box office weekend, but still,
okay,
it's his first number one, I think. Like,
it is. It's, I think it's like, I mean, it might be his highest grossing, at least his fastest paced box office so far, which is funny that Disney no longer has the distribution rights to the Ghibli films, because this is also coming out not the same weekend, but while Disney's big animated feature is still in theaters, Wish, which is not doing too hot either critically or financially.
No, and I'm wondering, because I think this was hyped as Miyazaki's last movie, and there was almost an absence of marketing around this in terms of like trailers or in-depth like plot descriptions.
Well, because they didn't have the Disney
money, right? Yeah, so it was just like, hey, by the way, this movie's coming out. Here are some like visuals. Come see it because it's Miyazaki. And people showed up.
That's it, yeah. I showed up. So I'll give a brief plot description because this is how I went into the movie. I'd seen maybe one trailer for it. I didn't want to look up too much about what it was about. I wanted to vibe with it. So this movie is essentially about a young boy living in rural Japan who ends up meeting a gray heron that is a bit more than it seems. I think because it's a Ghibli film, it's pretty safe to assume that it has magical powers. At least I did going into the movie. But I didn't really know like what to expect. And this movie goes places that I was not expecting.
I guess I knew it was going to be like a spirit of some kind. Like, oh, I'm not just a heron. I'm like, sure, what do herons mean to the Japanese people? Something interesting, I'm sure.
Mm. I was hoping it was going to be like How to Train Your Dragon with hair. How to Train Your Heron.
Yeah, I felt like it was a little heavier than the How to Train Your Dragon like movies. More like How to Train Your Dragon is very conventionally like coming of age. You've got some fantastical elements, but The Boy and the Heron feels a lot more meditative. And I think there is kind of a underlying theme that is a little bit heavier than what a lot of Disney movies or some of these animated adjacent movies that we're used to.
I mean, even previous Ghibli movies, I think this was quite a bit heavier than. I think I've seen a lot of people comparing it to Grave of the Fireflies, which I agree with. I think Grave of the Fireflies is definitely darker. Like that movie is like, it is designed to make you cry. That movie is heartbreaking. This movie though, like, I mean, it opens up pretty hard and like, you can kind of tell what you're in for from the very beginning.
And the animation is so beautiful at the very beginning too, with like the fire,
it's like gorgeous. The hospital,
and
the curve, like,
you're like, oh, this is so impressionistic. Frames, like, yeah. Oh, it's beautiful.
And it's like the best part about Ghibli's movies. And one, it was just so nice to see, such like a lusciously animated film on the big screen again. Because we just don't get 2D animations like this in theaters anymore. We barely get them on streaming. But like the amount that is conveyed, not even through the dialogue, just through the animation and the style, is so unique to Ghibli, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the parts of the movie that I enjoyed the most were not necessarily like the narrative aspects, but the design, the art. You know, the music was beautiful. The way it was animated was beautiful. Like, honestly, the story is where I was like, it didn't quite connect with me as much as I thought it might. But it's also maybe, I think it's a little bit more complex than your average coming of age film, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of it, too, is just like this movie feels like a vibe movie. Like you just kind of go with the flow. Because I agree. I don't think the narratively it doesn't really feel like it is all that cohesive.
But some of my favorite Ghibli movies are the vibe ones. I feel like Kiki's Delivery Service is a huge vibe one. Like My Neighbor Totoro, totally a vibe one. I really enjoy those.
This is a very different vibe than both of those, but yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but it kind of sits in a pocket of like what exactly is the story, and it's like a kid comes to terms with his stepmom.
It's like, what does it matter?
Yeah. So, I mean, I like overall, like I enjoyed it, but it didn't really connect with me in the way that some of the other ones have, like upon first viewing. But it could change if I saw it a few more times.
Yeah, well, I'm really curious because I'm pretty sure we both saw the subbed version, right?
Yeah, isn't that... This is the first time I had ever seen a Miyazaki movie subbed. I've only ever seen them dubbed. Correct.
Interesting. I think... I haven't seen all of them.
What about you?
I watched them as a kid. So growing up, I didn't want to read the subtitle. So, like, you know, I watched...
I ain't reading this shit.
Nausicaa. Yeah, it's like Nausicaa dubbed, Spirited Away, Kiki's Delivery Service, Totoro, like all those were dubbed. I think I started going back and watching the subbed versions. Like, I love the subbed version of Porco Rosso. And I thought this was really well done, too, although I'm very curious to see. I think it's a good excuse to go back and watch it again because I want to hear that voice cast, mainly Robert Pattinson just going full freak mode.
Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense of what he's doing, and he's perfectly suited to it. But you're right. I think sometimes you do get a different experience watching something subbed versus dubbed, especially, I mean, I think we're neither of us are strangers to anime. And I think there are a lot of people who are like, oh, yeah, the dubs of certain series are like amazing. Like I would say, like Cowboy Bebop is like one of like the better ones for the dub.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are like, oh, the subs are significantly better. Like I would say the subs for Death Note are significantly better. Naruto, like significantly better than the dubs. But for the Ghibli movies, you usually have pretty high profile people doing the voices, which leads to a significantly better product than you're used to when you're watching dubbed anime. Because, I mean, there's so many series going out right now, and I feel like there's only so many English-speaking voice actors versus, like, in Japan. It's like, yeah, we're doing this all the time because anime is a huge export for us. So you're hearing it like a higher caliber.
They also get paid more in Japan, too, because, like, it makes more money in Japan in the native language. But I do think that is why I generally prefer the subs whenever I am watching anime, because it's just kind of like the dialogue doesn't really change, right? It's still the same script, but it's much harder to determine if it's a bad voice performance if you don't speak the language versus listening to someone who they just got off the street to do a dub.
Yeah, that's very fair. You know, it's always like the big question of, can you judge a performance if it's in a different language?
Yeah, and it's like, I think in live action you can, because there's more to it, right? Like, there's body language, there's action, there's timing and blocking and everything. But in terms of voice acting, I think it's a lot harder.
Yeah, I wonder, because in the same vein, you know, when I was like, you know, minoring in Spanish, like watching a lot of like telenovelas and different Spanish works of art, there's a clear difference. Like, you can tell when someone's you know, the difference between like Penelope Cruz acting in a you know, a Spanish speaking movie versus like somebody in like a telenovela that you're using to illustrate a point about like character or whatever. Like, you can tell the difference. And I think it is slightly different in animation, because I can't really think of a lot of animated movies where I'm like, these voices were really, really bad. What about you?
Not a lot of, I mean, there's some movies where it you can definitely tell that like they got a celebrity that just kind of phoned it in, or like, you know, the voice director, which honestly I put more blame when it comes to voice acting on like the director not getting the right performance out of people that like are clearly talented because they've, you know, made it.
You have a limited amount of tries. Like, it's right there.
And it feels like a lot of times these directors are, maybe they're like new to the job and they're like afraid to like direct these celebrities acting in their, you know, little animated film. So they just take like, you know, they take like the first take. I'm like, okay, that's good. Let's move on. I don't want to tell you you're wrong.
Right. And we know, like, I mean, I feel like it's different for certain films too, because you have like Toy Story, which is like relatively famous actors. And you got like Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, you know, people who have been in the system a good amount, who can like express and like emote. But we have quite a few other movies. Like, think about like Up. Like, I can't really think of a famous actor who is in Up, but it's an iconic Pixar movie with no famous like voice actor.
Yeah, I think a lot of it too is the production styles of like, and like anime TV shows versus like whether it's Western or animated films. A lot of times, like feature length films will have the voice acting done first, right? And then they'll animate around the performance that the performer gives. But in animation or animated series, it's the opposite. We're like, okay, the storyboarding, the animation is done. You have to fit what we've animated on screen now, which I think is a lot harder for a performer, especially when like it's in a language that you don't speak, which is why I think a lot of anime dubs are pretty bad.
Right. Yeah. Because they're like trying to time it to a a language that doesn't have the same cadence as the one that they're speaking.
Exactly, yeah.
And it is very fun to watch those videos of them being like, okay, you have to say this and this like cadence, like here's where you have to hit these certain like parts of the script. It's like, wow, this is so convoluted. How, you know, but that's what, like Pokemon, the movie, you know, not going to have the same type of voice acting as a Miyazaki movie. So I'm interested to see the dubbed version of it specifically for Robert Pattinson, but overall I thought this like the voice acting in this movie was really good. I hate parakeets now because of this movie.
I didn't hate the parakeets. I loved the parakeet design. Like, I don't like
a lot of cool design show up creatures and, like, in this. Well, like very cute. Very cute for no reason.
Classic Miyazaki character design. It's like someone tweeted, like, you can fucking tell, like, you know, tattoo artists are just rubbing their hands together after watching this movie because of all the fucking people that are going to get this design, all these designs on their arms now. And I believe it. Like, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I love the parakeets, though, because something I didn't even think about, like, I always knew parakeets had, like, the weird little nose thing on their beak. But the way that they like amp up the breathing sounds when the parakeets show up in this movie, just like I was smiling the whole time. I'm like, I never really thought about that. But now that I see it, like I see like the humanoid parakeet and just hear like the heavy breathing of these people, I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That's weird, but it makes sense.
Yes. I think overall the plot for me worked relatively well, but also was confusing when it came to like the very end. When it was like everything was trying to like wrap itself up, I was like, wait, what's going on exactly?
Yeah. It gets way more like timey-wimey than I was expecting it to.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, it's almost like maybe the closest thing that Hayao Miyazaki's really gotten to sci-fi almost.
I don't know, like he's got Nausicaa, you know? And
stuff, but and that's always the thing, right?
Big Looper vibes.
Anytime time travel is introduced into any film, I kind of hate it because it's like, well, if you're not going full on like Primer, like here's the logic of how everything works, you can always just sit back and be like, okay, well, that doesn't make sense. Why didn't they just do this and that? And like Looper has the same problem, but it's like a good enough movie will make you forget about that. Yeah. And I think this movie to a certain extent did.
I agree. But there were some fantastical elements that like the movie kind of tried to introduce an idea of magic and then made it more scientifically magic. Like the levels of the fantastic that were layered upon each other made it borderline incomprehensible. And so at the time they're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. They're like, oh, by the way, it like at the beginning of the third act, they're like, okay, here's like, we're going to give you an answer to the mystery. A fucking meteorite fell from the sky. And like, they just kind of like leave it there. They're like, oh, okay. So we have multiverse. We have time travel. We got meteorites falling from the sky. But it's like none of it's really explored. And maybe it's just the comic book brain in me that's like, well, I feel like I kind of want to know more about how all this works now. But obviously it was just like it felt like they had to wrap it up somehow.
You know, like, well, now I have to go to my dad who makes parts of planes so that the Japanese can wage war on the free people, you know. Like, interesting. You know, it's always a little summer excursion. I feel like Miyazaki is big into the theme of kid who is maybe lost something, goes on a little excursion.
Like he just reuses his childhood a lot, right? Because that's like what his, you know, he grew up in rural Japan in the middle of
the
war.
He's like the Judy Blume for young Japanese men.
Yeah. Oh, put that on the poster.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like there is, I mean, a strong theme of like nature, obviously in this movie, as there's been in quite a few other Miyazaki movies, the pelican scene specifically, him to be like, please, I'm here to balance out the ecosystem. Kill me.
Yeah. Jesus, dude. Like that shit was rough. And then even just like the fact that like, oh, these are just like actual man eating parakeets. I'm like, oh, there's like a level of menace that, exists in other Ghibli movies, but I'm like, oh man, it's funny that like these guys are so cute, but also man eaters.
And they always have like also, knives, like they're like kind of going over, like right, very goofy. Yeah. Like,
I do want to give a shout out to the Parakeet King. What I love his character design.
Oh, yeah.
And like his whole line at the end is like, you go back, save yourselves, but like tell them I was a good king. And then he just fucking goes off and does this whole thing. Also, I just learned today that Dave Bautista is the English voice of that character.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, oh, that's perfect. I really need to see the English dub now.
Yeah, I would really like to see the dub. But overall, I really enjoyed this. This might have been my first Miyazaki movie in theaters, I think.
Hmm. Good experience.
Yeah, overall, like, very good experience. Kind of, like, very mellow. Kind of hanging out.
Yeah. How'd you feel about this being Miyazaki's last film, since it seems relatively likely that it is going to be his last film?
Well, no,
considering he wanted to retire like 8 years ago.
Well, I heard he was like, I'm retiring. This is going to be my last movie. But apparently he's come to like the offices and be like, I actually got a lot of other ideas. So he's back.
God, I mean, I hope he gets to make them, but it's not only the retiring. It's the fact that he's fucking 82.
Yeah, that's old.
That's real old. And also he is like, he's a chain smoker. Like, good for him for making it that long.
You know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that he's got a passion for life, right? He also has a passion for cigarettes, which I love seeing him portray in his films.
Oh, yeah. No, everyone's always like, especially in this movie, they're like, tobacco, you can't get it just anywhere. Like, Miyazaki's like, you fucking know. You know.
Yeah. It's the food and the cigarettes in Miyazaki films are always just like, oh, man, I need it. I need it now.
Yeah, right. Okay, so despite claims that The Boy and the Heron would be Miyazaki's final film, Studio Ghibli Vice President Junichi Nishioka said in September 2023 that Miyazaki continued to attend the office daily to plan his next film. Suzuki said he could no longer convince Miyazaki to retire.
Man, get out of here.
Yeah, so Miyazaki's just like, yeah, I'm going to make more movies.
Yeah, I hope he makes it. How old is Scorsese? Is he older or younger than Miyazaki?
I feel like they're probably the same age almost.
Yeah, they gotta be. They're definitely both in their 80s, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, I hope he gets to make
Scorsese
as many
81.
Movies. Oh, wow. Yeah, they're close. Damn. Well, I hope that they make a shit ton of movies before they decide to retire permanently, but part of me also feels like, without spoiling like the actual plot of this film, I wonder if it feels kind of like a mean-spirited comment on his own legacy, like trying to find a successor and also knowing that like his son, like what's it, Gorō Miyazaki, tried to direct a film and apparently it was fucking awful. So Maybe he's coming to terms with that too.
Which one did his
like ear Earwig and the Witch.
Ugh. Yeah, I don't know.
Fucking. It's like Ghibli's only 3D animated film. And
which is crazy because I feel like they can make insane 3D movies.
Oh, I'm sure they could. But also, I'm glad that they're not, because they're like the only studio left doing 2D animation.
Right. Well, I mean, even their 2D animation, they it has like elements of 3D animation in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So I'm like,
but the majority of it is like insane. Proper 2D cell animation.
Right. No, it's beautifully done. And I think it is of a certain style, but I don't think there are. I'm trying to think of, do they actually have any 3D elements in Miyazaki movies? I can't remember like a 3D sequence of particular note.
If anything, I think it's like scenery. I think they do a lot of like, they do some 3D trickery probably to get like a camera movement.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think any of like the characters are ever 3D animated. Or if like there is anything 3D in the movie, it's generally to give it a sense of like otherworldliness, right. Which I think like the blocks might have been 3D animated in this movie, which is fitting.
Okay. Do you think that?
Yeah.
What character out of any of the characters in this movie would you like to see in Fortnite?
I want a Heron skin.
Yeah, you want the Heron?
Yeah, like I want the weird fucking half manlet Heron skin,
yeah,
to run around like that. The other skin though I would love is the dad, like when he's like, I'm gonna go to the fucking tower and get my son back, and he's like in his business suit, but he just throws a katana into his belt loop and grabs a lantern and rope and shit. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool.
I do love how the dad is like, I love vengeance. I want to avenge my, yes, son. I will kill the other, yeah, kids at the school if they hurt my son.
Oh man, and he's a rich factory owner, so he can do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's like, get in the Datsun and we'll drive there. And it's like the,
it's so good.
A piece of, yeah, shit, like car from the 30s or whatever. Horrible.
Still, though, back when, you know, they took a bike to the hometown. Although that would have been wild. Like, I do wonder what Miyazaki's like childhood was like. Did he actually grow up in like a fucking pagoda in the countryside in Japan? Because that sounds awesome.
It was very weird for me to watch a Godzilla Minus One. And then The Boy and the Heron immediately after, because they take place in a very similar time. It was like, wow.
I thought Minus One was like I thought it was set in the modern day.
No, Minus One is set like right after World War II.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay. Fuck, I need to see that.
It's good. It's very good. Highly recommend.
Everybody said that. Everybody's compared it to Spielberg.
Sure. Yeah. In that it's good. Like...
Well, I think that's all we have this week, unless we want to talk. What other movies came out this week?
No, I don't think
Renaissance.
Yeah, not the Beyonce film. Renaissance. I feel like we're about to get into the period where a lot of movies are all going to be coming out. I really want to see,
yeah, like Aquaman 2.
I actually do want to see Aquaman 2. I feel like a fucking idiot for saying that, but no, I want to see that shit. I want to see Poor Things. Want to see Maestro?
Yes.
I got movies on my list and I'm like, give them to me. They're like, no, you're going to get them and you're going to get like 10 movies in fucking 2 weeks. You're going to watch all of them, yeah, you stupid idiot. And I'm like, why are we doing movie releases this way? I really don't understand.
They know we're on break.
No, but I'm just like, put some of these movies in the fucking summer. Like, I want to see movies. Like, why is Aquaman coming out now? Why couldn't it have come out like... If Aquaman went up against Fast X, it would have destroyed it.
Probably.
Yeah.
But, you know,
Fast X James is fucking Gunn, dog
he,
shit.
He had too much faith in Blue Beetle. You know, he was like, we can't take screen space, God, away from Blue, yeah, Beetle in the summer.
Yeah, sure. Just fucking
put, you know, they want to. Aquaman's going to own Christmas now that Star Wars is not a thing anymore.
Yeah. Anything else big coming out around Christmas that we need to know of? I want to see Anatomy of the Fall still.
That'll be streaming. It's got to be streaming soon. I want to see American Fiction. I think I bought tickets for that next week.
Yeah. See, this is like the whole issue. Everyone's like, hey, what are your like best movies of the year, and it's like a bunch of things that haven't come out yet, or they're only out in like 10 theaters in the whole fucking country.
Oh, are you going to see Wonka?
Yeah, I want to. Yeah, sure, I want to. I'll see Wonka.
Yeah.
I'll see any movie.
That's this weekend, baby.
Finally, Timothy Chalamet.
See, Timothy Chalamet be a little quirky man.
A full-on musical.
Oh, Iron Claw.
Iron Claw. Yeah. Oh, I want to see Iron Claw. Is that on Christmas?
No, that's the 22nd. But you know what is on Christmas? That is probably the only thing I want to see on Christmas. Ferrari.
Ooh, I do want to see that as well.
And then I think that's about it. Then we get into the January months.
Yeah. What about
honestly, in my opinion, even more fun.
Have you heard about Zone of Interest?
I have. I don't know if that's actually getting released or if it already came out and I'm just waiting for it to be on Mubi or something.
Yeah, it's always on like, oh, hey, it came out in France. Like,
right. Two years ago. All these like everybody's fucking list now. I'm like, I want to see that. That sounds great. I just can't.
Netflix, buy it, you cowards. How hard can it be?
Yeah, get some prestige shit. Stop making Red Notice and whatever that Ryan Reynolds movie
is. Did you see May December yet?
No.
Watch that, and then we can talk about that.
All right, I'll give it a shot. All I know is the plot and the clips.
My top five of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like it. Did you see
Dream Scenario?
Not yet, no.
You can see that. That is currently in theaters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That is a very, very funny sex scene, which I hear May December is full of.
Not a lot of sex in it.
Just the implications of it.
Correct. There are children in it.
Yeah. Jesus.
All right. Well, you want to wrap this bad boy up?
Yeah. Let's... Jesus, how long has it been? Like a month since our last episode? Probably longer. We promise we'll be uploading more frequently. You just heard us talk about all these movies come out in December. So come Christmas break, we'll be doing an episode a day.
Yeah, let's do like fucking five episodes in a row. We could easily do that.
We'll splice it up into 10-minute episodes. Yeah, we'll be the TikTok of podcasts.
Right. Very, bite-sized podcasts, honestly. Be like just for your commute. 10 minutes.
Exactly. Well, stay tuned, and if we don't see you before then, happy holidays to all of that celebrate. But until next time.